Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Sherlock's Weekly Highlights podcast with me, Georgie Courage-Cole. This week, I'm joined by Charlotte Collins, Maya Lucky, and Carla Christie.
So, first of all, let's talk about TV. I finished Dr. Foster in the gym this morning.
I'm really confused because I thought we had very much agreed that it was rubbish.
Why
did you watch the second series?
I can now confirm it is absolute rubbish.
It was just so chaotic.
It was so bad.
It was so far-fetched. And I mean, I really liked the first series. I literally had no idea what was going on, and it was just insane.
Yeah.
completely insane.
It's just so badly written. I keep saying it, so badly written. Yeah. Let's not even waste much time on it. Yeah. Other than to say, it was also a really indulgent ending.
I thought it was a sad ending, though. Thought it was quite heartbreaking to see the boy.
I agree,
I was on the treadmill, so it kind of didn't hurt my heart. She's sort of quite breathless and to the camera. I thought that was all a bit
OTT.
Yeah.
They've definitely eked out that storyline for far too long, I think.
I know.
I don't think they should have carried on the second one, but...
No, well, they're clearly planning a third.
They will.
And you know, it's funny because we all are planning it, but ultimately 8.5 million people watched.
Yeah. People love
watching
it.
An episode. Mm. I mean, that's huge viewing figures in this day and age, so, you know, it's doing something right. Let's also talk about the George Michael documentary, which I watched last night. And this has been really hyped up, and it was, I don't know, did anyone else watch it?
No.
I watched some of it.
Well, I found it quite weird. It's quite weird how Kate Moss starts it. She spins around in a chair.
She's definitely had education lessons as well.
Sounded
a lot posher than she normally does.
She's like a Bond villain.
Her Croydon accent has definitely gone.
Yeah, I know. It's funny though, because it's not funny at all. It's sad, because he was supposed to be around when it came out, and so he talks about what his legacy might be and how he might be remembered, and that has just a really another meaning, because he obviously is sadly not alive. But it's interesting in some ways. There's lots of great characters: Cindy Crawford, Linda Evangelista, you know, all the supermodels that were in the Freedom video, and you kind of realise what videos were like back in those days when music made so much money, and you know, you didn't have the, like, downloading culture that we have now, and how much money they paid to get all those supermodels. So he has them. He has Elton John. He has Emmanuel Alt. He has all these amazing people, but I don't know, it sort of becomes a bit more about Elton John, starts talking about himself.
Yeah, but he's quite indulgent.
But it's so not like the Whitney Houston documentary. You know, there's nothing about drink, drugs, all the trouble he got into.
A lot about his relationship with his partner who died, which was just heart-wrenching. Mm. And I think that was, from the bits that I watched, that was quite poignant.
Yeah.
He was involved in making it, right?
Yeah.
So that's quite sad in a way then, because obviously he didn't want his legacy to be the drink and the drugs and that stuff. So, you know, because he obviously wasn't trying to promote that in this. So then it is quite sad in a way that obviously now he's gone, and that's such a part of what he's remembered.
And ironically, Sony are the ones that produced it, and he's, you know, obviously the whole point in the story was that he'd sued them as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Ultimately, I did read a review, and the takeaway of it was, or the sort of headline was, that George Michael was a great songwriter. He's not a great documentary.
Oh, he's the best songwriter. Yeah. I listened to the Ladies and Gentlemen album. It's like the album of my youth.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, I was such a Wham fan, but I got to that point with Wham, like I did with ABBA, where I couldn't listen to anyone. It made me feel sick. Sorry, Carla.
Oh, God,
Carla. So for anyone listening, Carla is in an ABBA tribute band. So if anyone wants an ABBA tribute band, email podcast@sherlocks.com.
Yeah.
And we can help you out. I was a big ABBA fan. You know, who doesn't like ABBA, but you know.
I don't.
Oh, sweet. How do you not like ABBA?
Well, there you go. You got to that point as well. You got to the point. Anyway, as you watch the documentary, you do realise what a big part of, well, for me, being 36, it was in my childhood. Has anyone been watching The Apprentice?
Yeah, I've watched the first two.
Good.
I mean, it is good because it's the same format every single year, nothing changes. But it's also not good because of that. Because I'm looking at certain characters and thinking, you're exactly the same person as that man from last year. You're as dumb as that woman from last year. Where do they find them?
Someone from my school was on it a couple of years ago, but I can't remember.
Me too. Someone I know.
Well, this is the first.
It was me. No, someone I know from school was also on it. She didn't do very well.
But this is the first year that I have not watched The Apprentice. I have watched every episode.
I thought you were a massive fan.
I'm a massive fan. I'm like, you know, entrepreneurs, I love it, but we are so busy with SL Live, which is going so well and so exciting. Can't wait for the next episode to come out. There was a lot of laughter yesterday when we sent it around everyone, wasn't there? But I just feel like I'm such an all or nothing. I don't really have the time to commit to The Apprentice right now.
I also think it did start as this like great show of like entrepreneurs and people really trying to make it in business, but inevitably it has become a bit of a like reality TV format.
Someone did say at the weekend, they turned on the TV or the TV guide or whatever it was, and there was X Factor and there was The Apprentice, and they were two things that really needed to die.
Yeah. I'm
sorry, X Factor.
Really?
I love it. That's when I know about it. It's like you're Strictly. We're about to enter Cozy Winter
Time. I'm a bit sad that Brendan might be leaving Strictly. Anything else?
Did anyone watch the Louis Theroux documentary?
No, I've not seen it.
No, I really want to. Richard's putting his hand up. Is it good? Join the podcast, Rick.
It was just really, I mean, it was heartbreaking. And
was this the heroin one?
It was, yeah. So there's three. So there's the next one, it's sex trafficking and then murder, I think. I mean, obviously all quite bleak subjects.
I did see that it was heroin that had taken over a whole village or something. I thought, I didn't really have the energy to go there tonight.
The main point was that it was, because it was quite controversial, that all of the people in the documentary, they all became hooked on heroin because they were overprescribed opiate painkillers. So you have this different view. Like, I think there's a stereotype, I think, with heroin addiction that people get hooked on it from really hard drugs, but every single person in this documentary had been prescribed opiates, and that's what the epidemic was about, because the pharmaceutical companies had basically overprescribed these drugs.
Yeah. And then they stopped giving them, but they cut them off.
Yeah, so they've cut them off, and now the cheaper and more available version is to get heroin. So that's why.
Why were they all being prescribed it? Was it?
Because they were making money from it. But it was heartbreaking. It's 1 in 10 babies are born dependent on heroin, and they're in withdrawal. So they're like, it's just so heartbreaking.
1 in 10 where? Sorry, in this village.
Where is it? Huntingdon. So it's 1 in 10 babies and like 11,000 overdose in a year.
In this
one area in America. It's crazy.
And they were treated for all sorts of different illnesses. It wasn't like everyone had one particular illness.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's horrific.
Yeah. And 1 in 4 in the population are addicted, which is just so high.
1 in 4?
Yeah. If that population, yeah.
Addicted to heroin. Mm-hmm.
Did Louis Theroux do that crystal meth
documentary? Yeah, I've seen that.
I watched that one years ago, but it's
draining to watch, aren't
they? He's really fascinating to watch. He's mesmerising, and he manages to kind of, just the way that he interviews people, it's just genius, clever. I think. Yeah, really, really clever.
Really clever. He comes across as not very clever by the questions that he asks, it works.
He's one of my biggest crushes.
Louis Theroux would be in my people to ask for dinner.
Yeah, me too.
That's not the same as what she just said.
No. He's really hot.
Oh my God, no. Sorry.
Yeah. He sort of could be, but he's is too much geek in him.
I think that's why
I
really like him.
Oh, he's your shouldn't, but he definitely would.
A really interesting kind of journalism and reporting. I've been reading The Psychopath Test by John Ronson. Yeah. It's not new, it's a few years old, but...
Hang on, John Ronson wrote...
He was the guy that did the podcast, The Butterfly Effect, that we talked about a few months ago, about the effects of porn. Mm-hmm. That's actually, I reckon it'll have a bit of a resurgence because it's coming to iTunes in November.
Yes, I'm waiting for it to come.
Right. Yeah. So he wrote this book called The Psychopath Test, which you would love because he goes into prisons, basically. It's kind of like a chain reaction. Somebody comes to him with a mystery and it leads him down this path of finding out what a psychopath is and how they kind of are actually really prevalent in our society and how there are loads of psychopaths, people who are like clinically psychopathic at the top of business, kind of in all forms of business. So yeah, really interesting. No.
I love it, Georgie.
I knew you were going to say that. No, I don't. Not that kind of, you know,
I can take
running
it.
Running banks and politicians and... What the bit that I thought you would love is when
Donald
he goes
Trump.
Into
there we
right
go.
Exactly.
Yeah, oh my God, really?
But basically, there was a guy, a kind of really eminent psychologist, who developed a series of kind of questions that you can kind of literally you can just tick if they have X amount of these things, then they are a psychopath. So he goes into prisons, interviews people who are psychotic or who have committed really bad crimes, and kind of analyzes how these people kind of learn to function in our society. Fascinating.
I'm sorry, it's a podcast?
No, it's a book. It's a book called Psychopath Test.
Really? Yeah. I've heard lots about it actually, because it is quite old.
It's like five years old, 2012.
Okay, I need a new book.
But it's great. And the other thing, I'm going to sound like I'm just kind of really obsessed with all this weird criminal stuff, is a podcast called Dirty John that I've been listening to.
Have you listened as well?
Okay, how many are you in?
I think I'm three in.
Okay, so
I've
got
five. Is that the one with the syringe and the rose?
Yes. So we ran a story on it this week. It's basically kind of the new serial. It's from the LA Times. They kind of did this expose on this guy and then subsequently turned it into a podcast. And it's basically just about this really creepy guy who marries this really normal lady and the effect he has on her and her family's life. But I mean, he is like, I mean, talk about psycho. You should read this book, having listened to that podcast. Literally, I'm like, check. I mean, okay. So creepy.
Great.
It is good.
My reading list sorted.
I feel like we need to move the Sherlock's offices to North London and I'm going to have a commute and I can consume all this media.
It's true.
I was so horrified that no one had seen Working Girl or Overboard.
Oh, I love Overboard. It's my favourite.
We wrote a list of the 27 movies that every millennial should watch. Basically, these are all the movies that I grew up with that I used to watch on repeat every day when I used to get home from school. Cocktail, Dirty Dancing, Pretty Woman. Yeah. Actually, we didn't put Pretty Woman in this list.
Yeah, it's there. Don't worry. It's there.
Oh, we did. Pretty Woman and numerous others. And anyway, how many of these have you actually watched?
I've done a jot down the side of each one I've seen and a question mark next to the ones I've never even heard of.
Which ones have you not heard of?
Empire Records.
Oh, yeah, I haven't watched that, but...
Heathers.
How have you not watched that?
No, it's really bad. I need to watch that.
I know that. That is... I mean, how do you not know that song? I just sang on a podcast. That's how passionate I feel about that. You've got to watch Empire Records.
Heathers.
Yeah, that's Kate Winslet, isn't it?
No, it's Winona Ryder.
Which is the one with the lesbians, and it's Kate Winslet when it's her first film when she's really, really, really young.
Oh, I can't remember what it's called, but I know what you mean.
Rich Nose.
The Gift?
No.
You're out.
I can't remember what it's called. I know what you mean.
Empire Records.
Yeah, Heather's Moonstruck. I haven't heard of
it. Oh, that's Cher, isn't it?
Moonstruck's crap.
And Desperately Seeking Susan.
That's crap too.
Okay.
But
I have some favourites on this list as well.
Yeah, me too.
So like American Beauty is like one of my favourites of all time.
Okay, what else?
Pretty Woman.
Obviously.
And The First Wives Club. I absolutely love that. I absolutely love that movie. And also Four Weddings, obviously.
Four Weddings isn't really a millennial. It's a bit later than
that. Yeah, I suppose.
I feel there's quite a time lag between sort of Heathers and Four Weddings, isn't there?
I did watch Working Girl.
Did you?
Off the back of this, yeah. And it is really, really good.
Good.
I did enjoy it. It's definitely up
did
there.
Did you really? Are you just saying that?
No. I honestly did. It is really, really good. I did enjoy it.
It's very inspiring. It's quite you.
Yeah, it is.
I love it. If anyone's listening and they haven't watched Working Girl, please go and watch Working Girl.
I love her voice as well. She's so
good. And it's such an amazing cast. Melanie Griffith, Sigourney Weaver, Harrison Ford.
That's the Dolly Parton song, isn't it?
Anne Baldwin.
Isn't that the 9 to 5 song from Working
Girl? There's an actual movie called 9 to 5.
The Working Girl song, that really slow one. It's so good, anyway. Lots of homework for everyone. So, last week was London Cocktail Week, and we wrote a great piece on all the things that were happening, which are now not happening. But I thought it would be interesting to hear where you will go for cocktails with the girls. It's something I'm asked quite often. Someone was asking me the other day, they were saying, oh, I fancy a girls' night, where do you recommend? And I was recommending the Mondrian. I like the fact that you've got Dandelion on the ground floor, which just won Best London Bar.
I think it's one of them.
I love it. Pink Velvet, Tom Dixon Interiors, and then you've got the Sea Containers Restaurant if you want food, and then you've got the Rumpus Room at the top, which is really fun. They have DJs, so I love that. If you kind of want to go to one place, I think the Mondrian's great. I also went to Monkey House, which I love. I've just launched Monkey Lounge, which is really cool. It's so fun. Yeah. They've done it like a sort of really gorgeous sitting room almost, but quite cool. But then there's a DJ and I don't know, it's right up my street.
I've only been for dinner at Monkey House, but I know obviously it opens up into a bit of a club.
Yeah, they kind of
have you
push
been
the
to the night?
Back.
Have you stayed there late?
Yeah, and they push the tables back and it's really fun. I don't need to go to a massive club, I'm too old, but I quite love
the fact you don't have to leave.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, because we're old, Georgie.
No, I agree with you. There's not a lot of places in London to do that.
London's moving away from it. The day of the super clubs are over. Yeah. They don't exist anymore.
I like Albert's. Albert's is great. If you're a Sherlock's VIP, there's another Albert's offer coming up. But again, Albert, you can go for dinner. I'm all for somewhere where you can go and that's your night. I don't want to fuck around in taxis. Where would you go for a night out?
I quite like Shoreditch House. And I love going for cocktails at Mark's Bar at Hicks.
Yeah.
It's quite cool inside.
Cool. Yeah.
And I really love, there's a cocktail bar in Bethnal Green called Satan's Whiskers. It's like a bit of a speakeasy. It's kind of like quite dingy, but really good cocktails in there. Good old fashioned. It's and they play quite cool music.
Mine's a bit more sedate, but I love the Zeta Townhouse, the Marylebone one.
I've never been there. I always think it looks really cool.
Well, it's so cute. It's like all kind of like fake chintzy and old worldy.
Velvet sofas.
Yeah, velvet sofas. Yeah, and
quite
kind of,
decadent.
Yeah, it really is. But it's so, it's all, well, now it's, I, nobody go there because it's always really easy to get into. So yeah, I always like to just like pop off and it's really, yeah, and it's lovely. You can just go kind of and pitch up there for like a whole kind of afternoon evening.
Okay, well I'm gonna check that one out for sure. The other place that's really good to go is the Experimental Cocktail Club on Gerrard Street. Well, anywhere that the Experimental group touches is pretty cool if you ask me. And actually I just went for my anniversary to their new hotel, the Henrietta Hotel, which is basically like the sister hotel to the Pig Eye in Paris, which is the one that everyone's talking about. Anyway, I really recommend it. If you want a night in a hotel in London that's not super expensive, I'm gonna get in trouble for that, but rooms start, I think, at about $250. And best thing about it, and the rooms are lovely and cool and quite retro, but the best thing about it is the restaurant. And foodies are really, really getting quite excited about the Henrietta's restaurant. And
what kind of food is it?
It's sort of continental, but quite modern. I don't know, things like salsify with nuts and white miso. And I don't know, it's just, it's really, really good. It's quite cozy, it's friendly, and it's really welcoming. And people I know who are really into food are talking about it. And yeah, we had a really awesome lunch there. So I really recommend it. It's in Covent Garden, so.
I loved the picture of the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, the decor is amazing.
Who doesn't want a pink bathroom mixed with marble? It's gold. I mean, that like ticks every box, doesn't it?
Interesting.
But yeah, no, it's a good place to go, whether you want a night away or a really good meal. Let's talk about what your Instagram photos say about you, because whether your social media posts are really carefully curated or they're spontaneous and slapdash, probably like me, I'm trying to be better, what you share on your Instagram feed could be revealing more than you think. And there have been all these psychological studies that have found links between the type of person you are and, yeah, the pictures you post. For example, if you use the Valencia filter, then you're likely to be popular, apparently.
I read this, I was like, excellent! I love Valencia!
So you're more popular. I think I'm probably more likely to be, I'm between agreeable or insecure by the looks of things. Which
based on which things?
So I'm laughing and smiling mostly in my, in my pictures. And I do have a lot of pictures of Callum, so that makes me insecure, apparently.
It means you're in love, that's what that means.
I definitely don't have any of me in the gym.
I was interested in the one that said all the photos of you are perfectly framed, then you're probably really conscientious. Also, because of Lou, who's just joined us, I don't know if anyone's seen her Instagram. I love her Instagram. Mm. And it's very, she puts the same, she's got an amazing Tumblr account as well, and she puts the same filter and border and everything on her photos. And I wish I could be more like that. I'm too slapdash and not conscientious enough, basically. Anyway, I thought that was quite funny. And actually, there's probably something in it, isn't there?
I could think about people I know and what they do and definitely tie them up to certain character traits. Yeah, definitely.
Let's talk about fashion now. It's impossible to remember a time when a handbag hasn't been a status symbol. But ultimately, they have just got astronomically expensive and so out of reach for the majority of people. Well, there's been a bit of a backlash, almost, because there's a $2.99 net tote. Mm-hmm. It's not even a tote.
No, that's
generous.
It's
a net sack.
It's a grocery bag.
Grocery bag that has been paraded on Instagram.
By everyone.
Ooh. Charlotte, you wrote this piece. I mean, you can't have got to the end of it and thought that your argument held any.
Would you ditch your bag for $2.99?
I think...
No.
I mean, it's like...
It's a nice idea.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice idea because I completely agree that the price of handbags is absolutely insane.
Yeah. Also, and it doesn't have holes in it. Doesn't everything...
It's like really... I mean, there's
so you need a sort of Comme des Garçons, you know, pouch.
Or like you need to put your like Sherlock
tote. And that's going to cost you about...
They can all be so cheap and free. So yeah, I think if the choice is, you know, a Chanel or a string bag, I kind of get why you're going to go down the string bag route if that is now in fashion. Having said that, obviously, there's a lot of kind of mid-price, sensible handbags that you could be buying that are a lot more practical and a lot more stylish. But I also, so I'm not a massive fan of those kind of mid-level handbag. I'm quite against them, actually, I think, because I think you're paying a premium. I think with the designer brands, they've gone too far because, yeah, you've got the craftsmanship, but then they're kind of paying a massive premium. But then with the kind of more mid-level bags, you're also kind of paying an even bigger premium, but it's still quite a lot of money if you don't have a lot of money. Does that make sense?
I would agree to an extent. Like, I do think there are bags that are on the high street that are considered to be higher-end high street that aren't worth the money because, you know, they are just as cheap as probably the high street ones when it comes to how they're manufactured. But also, at the same time, I'm someone that couldn't afford a, you know, 2.5 grand bag, so I would choose something like that purely out of the fact that I can't afford the highest price point, but I still want a nice bag.
So you don't want $2.99.
No, I don't want
$2.99. Oh my god, no. So I go the opposite way. I have to say, I'd rather take personally, if I didn't have some lovely, very expensive bags, I would take the fashion route as opposed to spending £500 on a
Go to Zara.
But I'm talking £100.
Zara, sure, okay, fine.
Zara does great leather bags. Yes, yeah. They do.
But I still think, as somebody who likes to wear fashion pieces, I still think that I would actually do it.
I don't think you'd ever carry a $2.99.
I actually do think I would. Maybe I'll buy one and prove you wrong.
Do it. What's $2.99? I'll buy it for you. Anyway, the other option is to go to a lovely brand like, was Mini Manu, now Demelier. You know, they are one of the few mid-market brands who've actually, you're getting better quality than you are on the high street, but you're not paying a massive premium because it's Chanel. So that's a good option.
Yeah.
I laughed because I thought what you were going to say was that you could always go to Vetements, who have done £2,000 version of the string bag.
Yeah, this is true. So day after Charlotte wrote her piece, praising the $2.99 bag. Yeah.
On Net-a-Porter, we saw that Vetements has created,
that it came out.
Vetements had copied the $2.99 bag.
In the same way,
$2,000.
Right, in the same way that Balenciaga copied the IKEA bag. Then I saw somebody of massive influence had one of those Vetements bags.
That's an absolute joke. I mean, they need their head knocking at all. Well, stupid.
Well, from one ridiculous trend to another. Forget sunglasses, because this season, the fashion crowd are turning to good old specs to make a statement. Nothing against specs. I also wear glasses when I bother to. I should do. But, you know, fair enough if you haven't got 20/20 vision. But we are now seeing fashion icons with 20/20 vision wearing fake glasses.
I think it's ridiculous as well because you might have the opinion that fake glasses look stupid, and if you don't know me, you probably think I'm wearing fake glasses, and I'm not. I'm clinically blind, guys.
You think it's
going to
be a
choice?
As a brand name.
I don't know. I just think I've got comfortable with my glasses at the age of 25. I don't want to take away from me because they're stupid fashion.
You have to wear glasses,
Emma.
I do.
I can't wear contact lenses. I spent 2 hours trying to put some contact lenses in. They were coloured ones, and I was really excited about wearing them out. And they had Tester written across the over the front. And then I also had like really swollen red eyes as well because it had taken me so long to put them in. So yeah, now I have to wear glasses.
Wearing coloured. I would never put coloured lenses in my eyes.
I was only about 20.
Yeah, they're dangerous, they are.
So, Carla, as a glasses wearer, what do you think on this trend?
Oh, I think it's slightly ridiculous. And why, if you don't need to wear them, like, why would you?
Agreed.
Yeah, it's kind of pointless. But yeah, it is a waste of money because glasses are really expensive.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll say is they do look quite cool, some of the pictures.
They do look cool.
Charlotte's nodding. Charlotte, would you wear fake glasses?
I wear contacts every day. So to have glasses, I just think I really just need a new pair. I don't like my existing ones. And I would also, I'm the same as you, I should wear them more actually because, as I say, I wear contacts every day. But I actually, you know, you and I were talking yesterday about the psychology of fashion a little bit. And I actually think that this isn't so silly because I can.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kind of understand why people might wear them in order to look a little bit more intelligent. Because frankly, that just it's whatever you
it
say,
negates people, it because you're wearing them in the first place, and you don't need to. So that kind of
you nobody knows that.
I disagree with the because I read this line. Hipsters like to be taken seriously. That's why they're wearing them.
They're idiots.
A, they don't. And B, I've actually felt my whole life that my glasses makes me feel like I'm not being taken seriously.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've kind of felt insecure about it. And so I always think people think, oh, she doesn't look very cool, or she's a loser, therefore she, you know, don't believe what she says. She's not really. That's how I've always felt.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't agree with that sentence. Just because you wear glasses, I mean, you're more of an idiot for thinking if someone's wearing glasses that they're more intelligent.
Yeah, but I just think it's a subconscious perception of people in glasses. So that might be how you feel about yourself. But I think that people who don't wear glasses know that that's how they perceive people who do wear glasses, and that's why they're wearing the fake glasses.
That way, do you think I'm really intelligent?
Yeah,
then?
Super bright.
Of course you are. What if you wear a monocle?
Yeah, no one buy a monocle.
If there's a 299 toe, there's going to be a monocle.
Everyone's going to be walking around with there spin bags.
That's like my Dragon's Den idea.
Whilst we're on the subject of fashion, I just wanted to mention Lucy Williams's latest collaboration with Misomer, because we ran a story on it last week, and it's so good, isn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah. Rich came to me yesterday and said, why does everyone wear Misomer? I said, what do you mean? He's like, well, I just chatted to Zoe and she was wearing Misomer, and Sam. Like, everybody is loving Misomer at the moment, it's true. And Rich is noticing, but it's great. The collaboration's so cool.
It's
love
really
those, like,
cool.
St. Christopher style necklaces. That's what Sam's actually wearing.
Yeah, so it's the Roman collection, and it's sort of got, yeah, like sort of ancient Roman coins and things. It's really different.
It's quite theatrical, I thought.
Yeah, it's dramatic.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And it's really interesting that she's had the vision, or they've had the vision, to create something really different to the first collection, which was so popular. And it's really unique. And I think it shows a lot of talent that they've come up with something that's really different. And the campaign images of Lucy wearing it are just incredible, aren't they? It's amazing. So do check it out. Everything's under £200, which is nice. We're doing a bit of a fashion run through right now, but we've done Misomer. Bowdoin. Let's just talk about Bowdoin for a minute, because that Bowdoin haul was just phenomenal, wasn't it?
I'm going to say it now. I love Bowdoin. Honestly, the haul, like, it's completely converted me. I don't think I've ever tried on anything from Bowdoin before, apart from those blouses that we shot a while ago. I love it. It's so nice.
I mean,
there's so much good stuff.
There really is. They're doing some really interesting things at the moment, and I think they shoot things in a really good way, but it's a very Bowdoin way. And I think what you show trying on the clothes is it's not just that Bowdoin woman.
Ooh, very true.
And yeah, it fits. Ultimately, it fits women really well.
Really,
and I think that, you know, try it on. Like, watch the haul if you haven't watched it. Watch it. And also, their footwear is just
so good,
amazing. Yeah. And we did a piece on the 10 new season pairs of shoes you need, from, you know, ankle boots to quartz to pumps to velvet flats. Love their velvet flats. It's just so worth a look right now, isn't it?
Agreed.
From Bowdoin to tights. How to look stylish in tights. I've got a bit of a problem with tights.
Me too. Mm.
Summer, I love to wear skirts. I just, in the winter, I just go, it's just all trousers. Mm. And I would love to wear more skirts in the winter. I think it's such a nice look. Love that look at the moment of a knee-high boot, or like a slouchy boot and a skirt and a big chunky knit. I'm also like, oh, do I want to spend that much money on a knee-high boot that I'm only going to wear with a skirt? I don't know. And then there's tights. And then there's tights. I mean,
they've got a bad rap, haven't they, tights?
They do.
They're just not very attractive.
No.
Or comfortable.
Do you ever wear tights, Charlotte?
No. I'm exactly the same. Everything you just said rings so true to me. I love the idea of skirts in winter, because you kind of rule out a whole other, like, mode of dressing by only wearing trousers. Mm. But I like to be warm. I get when it's cold.
But I feel like my wardrobe, therefore, or my look in the winter is very the same.
Me too. I get so bored of it as well.
I know.
Yeah.
Sorry. But if you are going to wear tights, what are the rules?
Well, we said definitely stick to black. None of this, you know, skin coloured.
Oh god.
Kate Middleton malarkey. Yeah.
Shiny legs.
Sorry.
Can we just talk about Kate Middleton dancing with Paddington Bear?
How much trouble do you think
Paddington Bear
got into for that?
I actually wanted to die when I saw that.
So funny.
Poor girl. I mean,
they went to Paddington Station to, like, wave off some school children. And they had a fake Paddington Bear, you know, like a man in a costume. And he made Kate dance with him and, like, took her hands and made her, like, do a jig and, like, twirled her around. But, like, poor woman. I mean, first of all, you can't start twisting a woman who's been in bed for, like, 3 months with nausea.
No, she's wearing a sort of shift dress.
Yeah, I mean,
plus, Paddington's not quite the right height.
Yeah, it's so uncomfortable.
It's not great, is it? I was slightly hiding behind my hands when I watched that on the Daily Mail.
Mr. Paddington was in big trouble, sure. Yeah, so back to tights.
Skin colour, no.
Make sure you actually invest, because as nice as it is to be able to buy, you know, a super cheap pack on the high street, they're not going to last, and they're actually not going to look good. There's nothing worse than those, like...
Sorry, I did...
No?
Expensive tights. You're going to ladder them anyway.
Not if you get really... Because I quite like the woolen ones. I think they look quite cute. And they don't ladder.
Well, that's true. But that's more of a different look, I suppose. Yeah. But yes, they don't ladder. That's
I quite like a low, quite a sheer
black denier. You know, like Corinne sometimes wears, she'll actually wear them with a strappy open toe, which I can't cope with. But, and Lucy Williams again, talk about Lucy Williams, she's quite good at rocking a really sheer black tight. And I used to quite like the polka dot ones. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
The polka dot tights.
So another rule that we had was to be brave, that there's actually, you know, fishnets have been back in a really big way.
There
you go. So,
you're cooler than me.
I'm not.
It says here, by selection, different tights serve different purposes. This just feels very dangerous to me. I feel like if I bought a selection of tights, I'd end up in some really bad outfit in this house.
You'd have to wear them all at the same time.
I'd end up with like polka dot tights with some sort of horrendous PVC skirt.
So what I meant more was to, you know, buy like the kind of tights that Georgie was just describing, you know, the Korean style, or kind of go for the slightly thicker, more opaque version, you know, if you're wearing whatever, a leather mini with some brogue or something.
Nothing in between. You just go really sheer or really dark. Nothing in between. So if one of the fashion lessons you should have learned by now is go sheer or dark on your tights, what are the other 12 fashion lessons we should all have learned by now?
So, well, I have some personal favourites on this list. So good grooming goes a long way is one of them. I think that is so key. I honestly think that you could be wearing something really unexciting and plain, and if you've got a blow dry and manicured nails, then it completely transforms.
Maybe you need a blow. I mean, lovely.
Okay, fine. Not even a blow dry.
But you know, just
whatever. Groomed.
You, Maya, you always look very groomed.
Yes.
You've always got your makeup on. You've always got your hair nice. And I think I noticed that, and it feels like you care and you make an effort.
Yes.
And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think it makes also just self worth makes you feel like you can present yourself a lot better. Like that's why I do it.
Yes.
If I come to work with chip nail polish and haven't got my eyebrows on straight, then I just feel horrendous the whole day, regardless of what.
I don't know what that means.
Do you mean pencil though?
Yeah,
they still don't have like
yeah.
Pencil ones.
They are mine, I promise.
Okay, so good grooming.
Okay.
What else?
Oh, looking after your clothes. God, that is something that I'm only just actually... My mum has been lecturing me for years, but I am so guilty of the chair. I don't know about anybody else, but just having that chair where you just chuck all your clothes, it's awful. And I went to take some bits to be... I thought they were being altered, but they weren't. It's just like mending problems. I've had, you know, like holes that I've made or buttons I've lost. £100 I spent on Sunday having things mended that I've not looked after.
But you can now suddenly wear them again.
Exactly.
And I had a pair of trousers with a little hole and I went and had them invisibly mended.
Yes.
And I've now got another pair of trousers in my wardrobe.
Like, I took a Burberry Trench to have some buttons put back on. He was like, oh, dry cleaning as well. And I was like, no. He was like, no, you need this dry cleaning. I was like, oh. Just really, you're gross. But like, really learning that actually to do those kind of regular maintenance things is actually really important.
Carla, do you have anything?
I think just maybe dressing for your, like, know what suits your figure, I think, maybe.
That's one of them,
I think that one of the key things I always bang on about this is having a good tailor. I don't really buy a pair of trousers without having them altered.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't have to have them altered, I'm quite excited and I want to buy them in several colours.
I should do that, actually, because I'm such a short ass. Most of the trousers.
Well, that tailor down the road,
long.
That one down the road,
yeah,
I just go and stand in there, take my clothes off, and brilliant.
I always remember it's a quote by Olivia Palermo saying that even if she buys something at H&M, she'll take it to her tailor to get it altered.
Oh, so do I.
Yeah.
Especially at somewhere like H&M, you need to do it even more because, you know, the high street is good at lots of things, but good fitting trousers aren't always.
Mm.
From fashion rules to dressing for success, because, you know, as we've said, how you present yourself is so important in terms of how you're perceived in the workplace. So we spoke to an image consultant who works with lots of sort of London professionals to find out how to nail a workwear wardrobe. What points resonated with you in this piece?
I thought that the thing she said about the kind of biggest mistakes that she sees people making is interesting, and that kind of ties back in with what we were just saying, that people's clothes don't fit. And that's such a base. I see that so often with men on the tube as well. You know, those suits, and you're like, oh my God, you just need your trousers taken in and your shoulders, you know. It's so easy to
look. But men just need to get on board with the fact that trousers can be quite slim-fitting now.
Yes.
And we went to a dinner party once, and after too much wine, I was quite vocal about the need for my host to get trousers that didn't look like he was going fishing.
Ooh.
Wide legs. And anyway, he then did go and get some slim-fitting trousers, and he was quite grateful.
Good.
He's a cool guy, he's a good-looking guy. And anyway, I was teasing him. And yeah, he took it in the spirit it was intending. But I do think men, have to get on board with the fact that trousers can be quite slim fitting, and it's a lot more flattering.
Same
for women, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Although we're going the other way, aren't we? Now women are wearing wide leg kind of boyfriend jeans,
exactly.
Et cetera, and men are wearing skinny.
Yes, but it's still about finding things that fit you well as well. So there's a limit with those oversized pieces too, isn't there?
Yeah.
So I thought that her advice about interview dressing was really interesting. That's something that you always see professionals kind of, that's such a big question. There's a big question mark over that and how to dress well and present yourself well for an interview. So I thought that was really helpful.
What did she say?
Well, she said just have nothing that you're kind of going to fuss with, which is so true.
You just don't wear something new for the first time.
Yes. Yeah. And often, I mean, we obviously, you know, we have people walking in and out of here all the time for interviews. And I often look at people and I think, I wonder why you chose, not necessarily in a critical way, but like, I wonder why you chose that.
What was
to make an impression.
Process?
Yeah, what was the thought process here? So I thought her kind of idea of just stripping it all back and going simple and unfussy was really good advice.
So she said,
good
do
advice.
Some, wear then, one thing that's memorable when you go for an interview.
Yes,
like either
that.
A shoe or a blouse with a colour or... I quite like that idea, like if you want to remember someone.
We talked about my velvet blazer long after my first interview.
We did,
do you remember?
I loved it. I can still picture you in your velvet blazer. Yeah, and I can't say that for a lot of interview ease. I liked as well the list she said of what every professional wardrobe needs.
Yeah.
A good trench. Slim-legged cropped trousers, I so agree. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, we went to interview Samantha Cameron and I was wearing kind of slim-legged cropped trouser and she was like, oh, they're really nice. And it was just interesting that she picked those out because her wardrobe is quite geared towards working women. Yeah, so I thought it was interesting.
Right. So the other thing she talked about were the brands who were really nailing workwear. So obviously she mentioned The Fold, which was just so brilliant for corporate women. But the other one that we thought
quite
was
expensive,
quite expensive, but you know, great if you're looking just for some investment pieces.
Yeah.
But the other one so worth pointing out is Karen Millen, who right now are just doing such good, I mean, it's not corporate and that's why I love it. I think if you're looking for a kind of pulled together professional wardrobe and separates that you're going to wear outside of the office,
yes,
it's absolutely nailing it.
And I hate the phrase from boardroom to bar, but that does sum up what Karen Millen are doing quite well. Lots of really nice sort of leather pencil skirts and white blouses with ruffled collars.
Or even like tighter knits that you could wear kind of from desk to dinner. Would that great
heels. Another great one.
Yeah. But they've got great heels, they've got great handbags, they have kind of got...
Nice jackets.
And coats, great coats, kind of everything you need to really kind of have a polished wardrobe.
I know, I think it's really worth looking at. I think people would be surprised if they're looking for workwear, actually, what they might find at Karen Millen. The last point I thought was interesting was, is having your colours done still relevant? And she said she thought so as a tool for guidance and direction. I thought she was great and very knowledgeable. I'm not sure I agree with that. To me, it was something at school. I remember certain mothers had their colours done and it was, ooh, they've had their colours done. And now they only wear mustard. But
I think it's advice for women who don't really know kind of where to start and who often feel that they're making mistakes when they're shopping and they're kind of buying things and then they don't feel great in them. So I think it's if you're kind of in that camp, then it's a good way of going back to basics for shopping.
But you're not restricted to one colour.
No. Do not wear head-to-toe mustard.
Let's talk about, well, organising your life was the piece, and it was about journaling and how journaling can be a really positive tool in your life, whether it's just for getting stuff done on a day-to-day basis or achieving your dreams, goals, or just sort of having something to look back to. Kiki K, brilliant stationery brand that we love, does these amazing journals. And we were inspired to do this piece having had Kiki speak at our Entrepreneurs Day. And she's a real journaler. Have any of you, do you journal? Have you written a diary? Do you set goals?
I found my old diary from when I was a teenager. So the word diary just fills me with dread because it was so awful. But I can see why. I think it could be like quite cathartic.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's a good tool to kind of make yourself feel better and be more kind of ambitious, I guess.
My mum kept a diary when she was sort of in her mid to late teens, and she still has it. She talks about this guy that was a boyfriend, and it's just really, it's so funny going back and thinking, like, what a nice thing to have if you could ever find the time. I feel like it's a bit of an outdated thing, isn't it?
So, yeah, I do not journal, but I have a kind of quite an overactive mind, and if I have a problem, then all the different kind of elements of that problem spin in lots of different circles. Mm. So I do like to write that down. I write pro and con lists, and I kind of have like a brain spill of all the things I'm thinking onto a piece of paper, and that way I can like see it. I can structure my thoughts way more clearly. And actually, I did it the other day about something I put on a piece of paper, and I left it on the kitchen table, and Ben said he came downstairs and found it and thought it was a pro con list about like reason to be with him. And he said he freaked out when he saw it.
No, surprise.
It wasn't them related. But yeah, I find it really cathartic, exactly as you say, to spill.
I agree. I'm not someone that has a goal journal or anything like that. And I actually think for some people it's quite hard to find the time to do something like that in a day. It's another thing to do. But if I am having a particularly bad day or there is something on my mind, I will write what would be probably considered a traditional diary, and it makes me feel so much better.
Where do you write it?
I have a book, and it actually is a Kiki K book.
Is it?
Yeah, in the drawer next to my bed. And I will write. It's not every day that I write it, but if I am having a particular pepped up day or angry or even inspired, but it doesn't have to be negative emotions, I will write a page worth of why I feel like that. And I feel 10 times better for doing it. And actually, it's quite interesting to go back and read the next week and think, you're an idiot, why did you do that?
It's like talking to somebody.
Yeah, but
and also, you can be even less held back than when you're having the conversation. Sometimes you need to spill everything and then just be able to see it. And you can be really honest because it's just for yourself.
Yeah.
I guess it's the same kind of thing. If you've fallen out with someone and you write a message, you want, and it is really cathartic because you kind of think, well, actually, you might be feeling one way at that time, but then the week after, you could have completely forgotten about it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a good,
Well, she said, writing in a journal can help us make the most of every week by embracing the power of reflection and self-awareness. Well, Christina said when we interviewed her that through reflection, we foster greater self-knowledge, which allows us to recognise our thoughts and emotions.
I agree. Yeah, I think so.
What I thought was really clever, what we did at our entrepreneurs event is in collaboration with Moo, we got everyone who attended to write their goals for a year's time on a postcard. Mm. We gave them to Moo, and Moo will post them to everybody in a year. Yeah. So, and I just thought
that was
brilliant. Yeah. So you could say, right, in a year, I want to be promoted to this, or I wanted to have started my business, or I wanted to have raised my funding, or lost weight, or whatever it is.
Yeah. God, I never think about that.
I just think that, I thought it was just so smart, the way this is going to arrive, and you're going to feel a bit crappy.
Even just writing it down, you put it out there. Yes. So you know,
telling the universe. Yeah.
They always need to set now like a monthly reminder. Postcards coming in 6 months.
You're on track to achieve this.
So October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and with nearly 56,000 British women diagnosed with the disease each year, we obviously need to do everything we can to raise awareness and encourage people to check their breasts. So Copperfield actually came to our last Health and Wellness event and did an amazing talk, really inspiring, about how to check your breasts. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, not religiously. They say you should do it, you know.
Every month,
yeah, and I do forget. But it's something so close to my heart, and since that talk, it's inspired me to do more often, most definitely.
Carla?
I realise that I haven't been doing it properly, so I do check, but not religiously, and I don't think I've been doing it right, though.
It actually says that it's quite good to do it in the shower with wet, soapy hands.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
But it said to look out for a change in the size, the look and feel, a lump, nipple discharge that's not milky, bleeding from your nipple, changes in the nipple position, a rash. Basically anything that doesn't look normal. And what I think is really clever is that there's an SMS service from Copperfield. So if you're listening to this, go to the Copperfield website and you just sign up with your phone number. I think you send them a text. And then from then on, they send you a text every month reminding you to check your breasts, which I think
genius.
Really clever.
Can I just add that this week, I don't know if anyone else saw, trending on social media this morning, actually did a live breast examination with a doctor and a woman.
I heard about this, yeah.
Completely topless, on TV, being checked, and being taught how to check. So, I mean, if you really want a how-to, that is something to search out for on social media.
Interesting. Let's finish on the Dater's Guide to Ghosting. Because if you thought the words ghosting, benching, and zombieing sounded like lingo out of a new vampire Netflix series, we wouldn't blame you. But the truth is, they're actually the latest dating trends.
Benching is hilarious.
I'd never heard of benching.
Or zombieing.
I'd heard of ghosting, but zombieing and benching.
So ghosting is where someone just vanishes.
Yeah, they just completely ignore you and go off the radar.
No explanation, nothing.
Complete radio silence, basically. And in this piece, it's quite good because it says what ghosting is, what to do about it, and then her opinion. And she says the best way to deal with being ghosted is to preserve your dignity, delete the ghost's number, and eliminate them from the pool of people you give a shit about.
Yeah, don't chase them.
Don't ask them why, you just let them
go. I think if you end up texting someone that's not responded to your text, you're not really going to get the answer that you want, are you?
No. Why won't you text me?
I do have a friend who got a ghosting apology like 6 months later.
Oh, really?
Like out of the blue. He like completely voided her off, and then 6 months later sent a message being like, I'm just so sorry.
Maybe he was benching
really
her.
Awful. Possibly.
Did he use the verb ghost?
I don't think he did. Shame. Two ghosts.
So benching is where someone keeps you on the sidelines, keeping their options open.
Yes.
That must happen a lot.
I think that's quite normal. Yeah, been benched.
Or done some benching. Yeah.
She says, a word, I like this, a word of warning, getting off the bench is unlikely to happen, i.e. if you're shit at football.
I quite like how brutally honest
you're not going to be in the team. Yeah, she is. It's good, that's what you need. Yeah. And actually, it's quite unfemale, this piece.
Yeah.
She's so direct.
Yeah.
And she says, if someone seems eager but can't make a regular plan, goes silent for extended time between messages and just blows hot and cold in general, confront them. Tell them that you're an adult that appreciates mature communication. So I thought it was interesting how in ghosting, she's like, don't contact them. But if you're being benched, just tell them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that is quite a grown up, yeah,
yeah,
way of confronting it.
And then the last one was zombieing. Has anyone had a zombie?
No.
I think these were all thought up at the same time. They just emerged.
No.
Zombieing is when someone you care about disappears from your life altogether. Weeks,
this
months,
has happened,
or even years, then returns from the dead.
Gosh,
with an out of the blue text.
So this is when they ghost you and then they... And then they, like, are resurrected.
So, yeah, that you'll just not hear from them for even, like... In fact, my ex-boyfriend did this. I didn't hear from him for 2 years. And then I got a big apology text.
Did he get in touch saying he wanted back in?
Well, kind of. It was kind of a half-hearted attempt of doing that. It was just checking in to see what I was up to and saying how sorry he was. But no, there was no definitive, I want you back.
But so, but in that thing,
dipping his toe in.
But you might have been any of the three by him then in that case.
But yeah.
You could have been ghosted and you just
right.
would have
known.
But how do you know which one you're in the midst of?
What a way to make me feel better about myself.
At least you're still on his radar.
No, but I think if you're being benched, you're that, like, drunk and dial, like,
okay,
yeah, I'm having sex tonight, fine. I'm going to call, they're my reserve. You're basically their reserve.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But how do you know if you're somewhere between ghosting or zombieing? Because you thought you'd been ghosted, but then you've been zombie.
I think the whole point with benching is that it's you have seen them recently, whereas zombieing is they just disappear. So it's almost like a flip between ghosting and zombieing.
Yes.
But yeah, you don't hear from them, but then you will hear from them at some point.
But like my friend, for example, she was ghosted, but then she was zombied.
Yeah, right. So that's the natural, that does seem to be what happens.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
So
unless you never
hear from them. So you start off as a ghoster.
No, you start off with a bench. Because you're on the bench as the reserve.
Oh,
then
they don't
even necessarily make that.
So then they disappear.
Yeah, you can go straight ghost.
Okay,
yeah.
Could be a straight ghost, but if there's going to be a sequence,
yeah.
And that if all three are going to happen, you're going to bench, ghost, zombie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, and really,
this is brutal.
And any of them result in
I'm not
telling
you
to F off.
Yeah. And on that note, that's it for this week. If you have any feedback, then do email podcast@sheerlux.com. And we hope that the sound quality has been better this week. We are mic'd up and we would love it if you enjoyed that to have your comments and your feedback. So do please rate, review and subscribe on iTunes. See you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.